This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. Today, LGIM launches its 11th annual active ownership report. While the pandemic once again dominated our attention last year, we also took decisive action across a broad range of other environmental, social, and governance issues. From healthcare to income inequality and our work on the living wage, through to our focus on the energy transition and climate change, a topic which culminated in endless debate, discussion, and collaboration at COP26, and which saw our CEO, Michel Scrimgeour, co-chair the COP26 Business Leaders Group. And while the terrible events of the Ukraine war are not covered in this report, I'll be asking what the current conflict means for responsible investing more broadly. In the meantime, joining me, Frances Watson, on the pod are today's guests. Kurt Morrison, Head of Investment Stewardship.
Hi.
Amelia Tan, Head of Responsible Investing Strategy.
Hello.
And Xuan Shan, Head of ESG Real Assets.
Hello.
Welcome to you all. And Kurt, a warm welcome to you because you joined LGIM in January of this year. You say in the report that you believe stewardship is all about measurable outcomes. Tell us, if you will, what you mean by that.
Thanks, Frances. It's about ESG return on engagement. In other words, it's about how we deliver concrete and measurable value in our engagements. I'll give an example. Our Climate Impact Pledge is a global ESG campaign where we engage with 1,000 companies to foster climate commitments and actions. The Climate Impact Pledge has specific indicators, process, procedures to help us not only to assess initial inputs, but also the outcomes we want to achieve with the companies we engage with. And I think that's where we want to move forward, is to focus on outcomes of our engagements, bringing measurability, impact, and transparency in the work we do.
Thank you for outlining that high-level picture for us. Amelia, I just want to turn to you now. What does all this mean then in terms of how we invest?
As investors, we believe ESG factors are financially material. And hence, responsible investing is essential to mitigate risks, unearth opportunities, and strengthen long-term returns. To enable this, we have organized our credit and equity analysts and the investment stewardship team into 9 sector global research and engagement groups, or what we affectionately call the GREGs. And this is really to blend insights and knowledge from our active fixed income, active equity, and stewardship teams to identify key themes arising from long-term structural changes. Also, we look to identify engagement topics in order to inform investment decisions, and hopefully to be able to use all of this for more forward holistic views of companies and therefore identify the winners and the losers. Now, by having a formalized approach to integrating ESG across LGIM, we do 3 things. We leverage LGIM's scale. We're talking about 3,000 management meetings and ESG engagements. 2, we challenge our decisions. We have a cross-team thematic collaboration with economists providing the top-down macro anchor and analysts determining the resiliency of sectors and companies from a bottom-up perspective. And 3, we coordinate our engagement. We speak with one voice. Now, these outputs then feed through to our proprietary active ESG view tool that combines multiple ESG data sources with our own insights, and which all of our portfolio managers can access to support security selection and portfolio construction. Now, example of these themes that we covered at the GREGs last year included the race to net zero, the obesity crisis and its impact on healthcare and consumer industries, and banks' social responsibilities.
That's interesting. So in effect, what you're saying is that we're further building on our ESG integration and we're formalizing it. Would that be a good summary?
Indeed. And in the year ahead, we're going to focus also more on how we evidence the GREGs in our capital allocation decisions as well.
Okay, all right. Well, let's turn from evidence to environment. and the E of ESG, of course. And Xuan, let me bring you in here, because what environmental considerations are you focusing on as head of ESG and real assets? What are you focusing on the UK-based real assets portfolios?
For us, we believe that building greater resilience against both transition and physical climate risk will really help to drive better investment decisions. So most importantly, for a large and diversified real asset portfolio like ours, we believe it's critical that we have a clear and robust climate resilience strategy that supports our net zero roadmap and targets. So in the report, we describe our work specifically on physical risk across our real asset portfolio. We have partnered with XDI, and they are a climate physical risk specialist, to incorporate forward-looking climate risk assessment covering a time horizon out to 2030, 2050, and all the way to 2100. Our analysis has indicated that flood risk specifically poses the largest current and future threat to our UK-based real estate portfolio. So through our work with XDI, we have been able to improve the granularity and accuracy of our analysis at asset level. And what this means is that we are able to ensure that the data and the outputs from our analysis are essentially investment decision useful. And what I mean by investment decision useful is that this work provides us with a physical climate risk profile for every asset in our portfolio. And this allows us to undertake more detailed risk assessment if necessary, and decide if we need to develop specific adaptation measures to the buildings itself. So all this work very much supports how we future-proof our assets and optimize investment returns.
That sounds really fascinating. Is this new groundbreaking research, do you think, Xuan?
Climate physical risk analysis has been done for many decades. What has improved is the quality of climate hazard data that we're getting from the models. And that has allowed us to improve the granularity and accuracy of our analysis across many different types of climate risk.
Okay, great. Thank you for clarifying that. Now, Amelia, how are you tackling the E in your investing strategies?
Well, we have created a toolkit, our award-winning Destination at Risk, and we use this to develop our own bottom-up energy transition scenarios, which we call destinations. And we translate these into company, sector, and portfolio level implications. Now, there are four scenarios ranging from the good, like 1.5 degrees Celsius net zero scenario, to the 4 degrees Celsius inaction, frankly, disaster scenario. We use these scenarios to explore the role our firm can play alongside policy changes and corporate engagement to mitigate climate risks and support climate opportunity. The 1.5 degrees Celsius scenario is an important strategic tool in light of our commitments to a net zero economy. Now, in 2021, we built new modules for more challenging sectors like oil and gas, utilities, and financials, as well as an approach for sovereign debt. Destination at Risk is really trying to answer four questions. The first is, what do different climate outcomes mean for the global economy? The second is, what risks does climate change expose my portfolio to? The third is, what climate outcome is my portfolio aligned with? And finally, the fourth is, how far away from net zero 2050 might my financed emissions be? So we use all of these inputs in our climate impact rating, which informs our dedicated engagement program, the Climate Impact Pledge, to help companies step up their ambition towards net zero. We also use this as key inputs in our net zero solutions to support our portfolio managers in achieving decarbonization objectives, to align our portfolios to our clients' targeted net zero outcomes.
And that's the key, isn't it? Aligning portfolios to the outcomes, to these temperature outcomes that you've just outlined. Now, let's go from the E then to the S. And Kurt, of course, we're seeing, you know, the increase in the cost of living. It's hitting us all to varying degrees. And there's been a lot of talk about the real living wage. What are we as a house doing on that front?
Thanks, Frances. Well, cost of living is associated with inequality, and inequality is one of the major issues of the century. As a matter of fact, inequality has been on the rise since the 80s. And Jim, strongly support, as you mentioned, the living wage. Give an example. We engage with companies to commit to the living wage. One direct example of that is Sainsbury's. This year, we filed a shareholder resolution against Sainsbury's to make sure that their policy on living wage will be implemented across all their employees. We're also very pleased to be part of Responsible Investors group that influenced companies. And when I say a half of the FTSE 100 companies and major household names in the UK are now living wage accredited. So this is a long process, but it shows that our commitment as a responsible investor to tap not only governance, environment, but also key topics that are dear to most individuals, which is tapping inequality through living wage policies and engagements.
Would you say that's enough, though? I mean, that is a statistic that's obviously mentioned in the report, but do you think half of FTSE companies being real living wage accredited is enough in this environment?
Well, the perfect is the enemy of the good. I think it's a long process for companies to integrate some living wage policies and practices. So it needs a lot of a customization, engagement, and understanding that, again, ESG is not a linear approach in dealing with companies, rather to take a more bespoke approach to making sure that living wage and as well as a climate topics will be properly integrated based on the capacity and capabilities of the companies.
Okay. Now, Shwen, what about you? How are you bringing the S to life in your area?
For us as long-term investors in real assets, we have an important role to play in a sustainable economic recovery. And we can deliver tangible outcomes for the people and for the communities that live, work, and play within the buildings, homes, and infrastructure that we own, we operate, and we finance. So what I think remains essential, but is often forgotten, is this need for a fair and equitable transition, because, you know, social and environmental objectives must be understood as intrinsically linked. So in the report, we talk about our work as long-term lenders to the social and affordable housing sector, where we've worked with some of our borrowers in the sector to structure the loans to incentivize the borrowers to achieve specific sustainability targets. An example is where the borrower receives a margin discount on their funding if they meet specific energy efficient targets in the homes that they build, own, and manage. And by doing this, we are supporting the social and affordable housing provider in their energy transition plans. So from a social perspective, by improving the energy efficiency of the homes, this also helps in reducing fuel poverty in the long term, because it provides more affordable energy costs to the residents, ultimately.
And Grums, that's such a pertinent issue at the moment, isn't it? Talk of fuel poverty. Of course, another pertinent issue at the moment is the terrible conflict in Ukraine. Kurt, as our CEO, Michel Scrimmager, said in the report's foreword, Russia's invasion of Ukraine has contravened almost every ESG metric. What does the current conflict mean for responsible investing?
That is an excellent question. We see a human tragedy at a large scale. We as responsible investors, we have to look how this situation is playing at the long term. We look at ESG becoming more complex and it's tied off ethical as well as political factors. Things are getting more complex. And we as an LGM, we're engaging in developing a strong framework to assess human rights factors in our investments and engagements. I know it's just early stage, but we have to do this because we believe that the future lies on strong elements of ESG frameworks, policies, and actions. And we also know we have to work with others. We cannot see ESG working in isolation. So that's why we're working with NGOs, international organizations, and with our peers to find harmonization of process and engagements in this field of human rights.
Well, a sobering note on which to end, but end we must. Obviously, in this podcast, we've only scratched the surface of what this report contains. In it, you'll find tireless examples of our work on agricultural policy, deforestation, antimicrobial resistance, as well as ethnic and gender diversity. To read the full report, you can go to lgm.com/active owner. But for now, thank you to all of our today's guests, and thank you to you for listening. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating, or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous, on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording, and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website, lgm.com. Copyright 2021, Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, a licensed corporation, BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.